Hey, everybody, welcome to All Star. there we go.
You should leave all of that in.
Yeah. I did that last time. Actually, Chip Zdarsky was on one of the shows, and I was like, ah, and he's like, you leave that in. And I'm like, all right, it's in the show now.
Yeah.
So let's try to keep it. This is a reflection on you, too. So I want to make sure it's at least halfway polished. Mm-hmm. But hey, folks, welcome to the All Stars. I am Sal. That's the All Star, Joshua Williamson. Welcome to the show, man. We're back. We're back, baby.
Yeah, we're back
almost
again.
A full
yeah.
year of the show.
Oh, wow. Is this 12? This is 12, right?
Yeah, I think so.
You and I have a plan. I was thinking about this a lot the last couple of days, what we're going to do potentially next month. I don't know. We always say we'll do it next month. We're going to do something.
I know, and next month is like, oh, shit, we'll it's already this month.
yeah, we'll do something. We'll do something special. We'll do something special soon to kind of celebrate the fact that we've been doing this for a whole year. But yeah, thanks for having me on here again and tolerating me for the last year and talking about
Complex stuff.
Pew, 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 pew.
complex, baby.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Complex. The last time that we were doing the show, they hadn't announced the amalgam stuff.
Oh, yeah, dude.
So here we are now in a post, oh, they're doing amalgam. How long have you been keeping this secret from me?
Oh, me? You're talking about the collections and stuff?
The omnibus, yeah.
Not that long on my end. Not that
now,
long.
I see that announcement and I'm like, we were just talking about
crossovers. Every once in a while, DC will do a good job of keeping a secret. Even for people like me. You know, it was funnier back in the day, like when I would go to the office a lot, because way back, you know, during the rebirth days, pre-pandemic, I would go to the office like almost every other month.
Yeah.
And I would go down there and then I would walk around, and just by walking around, you would learn all kinds of stuff. Like
sure.
You would see, you know what I mean? Like you would see covers, you see art, people would want to show off and you know. So now it's like it's harder to learn as much stuff is going on, like on everything, unless you're, you know, when I was doing Dark Crisis, I would talk to all the other creators and I would try to read everything and have a good understanding of what's going on. Now I do like a little bit less of that.
Well, you're not in charge of a massive, you know, lineup of things, you know,
I still consult on a bunch of stuff, but you know, I definitely have taken a step back on doing, you know, the big, massive event stuff, but I'm still in the room and you know, I'm still a nosy, opinionated DC fan in the room.
Causing
trouble because I ask the questions and annoy people. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, I don't do as much of that stuff anymore. But, you know, I remember one time I was in the office and I saw somebody had a cover and it was, you know, because basically from New 52 all the way through Rebirth, Aquaman had the short hair and was clean shaven. Like
yeah.
He was classic Aquaman, you know, I guess you can call it classic. And then I saw this cover as I was walking through and he had a beard and long hair. And I was like, what is this, an homage cover? And they're like, no, we're bringing it back. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
The editor was standing next to me when he told me, and I hugged him. And it's very awkward. Awkward for everybody.
Are we cutting his hand off too? No.
No, there was no cutting hands off. I think about that a bunch of like the cutting the hand off thing and how that was so controversial. But boy, let me tell you, that's probably that window is probably the time that Aquaman was being read by the most people.
Seriously, dude. No, I mean, like, they made that maybe version canon in the cartoons. Like, they were like, yeah, no, Hook and Aquaman.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I might be wrong. Somebody, you know, I know when Jeff was doing it, when he did it during like New 52 and all that, I know it was selling a lot, but I wonder, I'd be curious. I think that's probably the window. It's the longest run.
Definitely.
You know, it is clearly the longest run. That run of Aquaman, the 90s one, is to date the longest run of it. And I think Peter David has the longest.
Peter David, yeah, that's his.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, because Aquaman's never really had... It is fine with Aquaman. Aquaman hasn't had these, like, long, epic runs on it, you know?
Oh.
Like, I love that character of those books, but it's like they've never had these, like... you know, it isn't like there's an Aquaman 300 around.
No, it's true. You
know? It's But anyway, well, one of the things we wanted to talk about, I have a list of things for us to talk about.
Oh, great.
Well, one we were talking about, I just got back from Disneyland again.
We
went back to Disneyland. It was funny. It was easy. It was like playing, I said to you before, it was like, because we didn't do it with the kids, it was just my wife and I. And so it was basically like going to Disneyland on easy mode, which was kind of the point of it, because we'd gone with the kids a few months ago. So we were like, let's go again, just us. And it was awesome, dude. It was trippy to go. So I have this thing, every time I go to Disneyland, I didn't realize this until this last year. Every time I go to Disneyland or an amusement park in general, but mostly Disneyland, I have this thing. It's like, I have to beat the park. Like I have to find a way to like either go on every ride, go on everything. Yeah. It's like I have it like gamed out in my head, you know, how to do it. And it's like the previous times I've gone to Disneyland, I always had a master plan of how to like do everything and do all this stuff. And I had like a setup, and I was definitely, I'm definitely one of those people.
Yeah.
So with this one, I sort of halved it because nowadays with Disneyland, you know, you have to like schedule your restaurant stuff like far out. If you want to go to Blue Bayou, you better schedule that 60 days out. So I basically planned everything out for that, for food. I was like breakfast and lunch, or I'm sorry, breakfast and dinner. I know what we're eating.
Cool.
The middle of the day or whatever. And so we just like ate a bunch of food and we went and we didn't, it was fun. We did everything we wanted to do, but I think it was one of the first times where I was like, it wasn't about going on every single ride or doing everything. It was about taking our time. And so it was just this gradual sort of thing. It was interesting. It was an interesting experience to kind of like, you know, not try to be so intense about things. I think my impulse is always to just go hard. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But you also, it speaks to your whole approach to like cons, where you're like, well, I got to get it all done by Sunday, because by Sunday I want to be at con time while it's happening. In my like loafers on like yeah, in, you know my, this, in my
yeah,
house
you know, yeah, it's funny, like I love when people start texting me at like 3 o'clock or something on a Sunday after a con, and I'm like, bro, I am at home.
Yeah.
I'm wearing shorts, I'm chilling with the kids, we're watching a cartoon.
Exactly. No, what I Commissioner Gordon do, man. I freaking hit the smoke pellet and I'm gone. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah. Dude, I've tried to ghost conventions a couple times, man. There was this last year I tried so hard to sneak out of a party. It was the last party of the con, and for me like I was it was for New York Comic Con, and I literally was just trying to like sneak out without anybody seeing me, but the problem was that I was on a couch in like the furthest part of the restaurant. So like trying to get to the door was like, I'm gonna make it, and I'm not gonna say bye to anybody, I'm just gonna get out of here. You know, I'm just gonna totally disappear. Yeah, smoke pellet, whatever.
Right.
I am not Batman, apparently.
No, you're going through a gauntlet of obligation before you get to the door.
Are you leaving? Yeah. What, you're leaving? And then I'm like, yeah. I'm getting out of here.
One more round.
Oh, and then somebody else, are you leaving? I'm like, God damn it. I'm just trying to make it through so I can leave. I had a flight at like 8 in the morning or whatever.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, I'm trying to get out of here. I'm like, man, I have to be at the airport in like 5 hours.
Do you ever miss like that meandering kind of like Disneyland with the wife approach to cons, where you're like, you know what, I don't really have a lot of plans. Yes. I have a lot of things going on.
Yes, I do. I feel like I'm going to try something like that with San Diego Comic-Con this year. I'm going to try to like, you've seen me at conventions. You've seen how it is.
I have seen the outline of you in dust at conventions.
I'm always on the run. I'm always like late to something. Yep. I'm always double booking somehow.
Going to, coming like, from. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, every time I saw you in San Diego, it was like, yeah, it was these.
Yeah, it was literally just an accident. Like we had a coordinated multiple moments to meet up, and it was an only incidental that we actually met up. My word, we are definitely going. So it's like, yeah, we'll have
that's great. Yeah.
We'll have to pass like ships in the night.
When I saw you at New York Comic Con, I saw you on one of the nights.
Yeah.
It was Saturday night, so I was leaving. Yeah, so Saturday night, I saw you at that restaurant. We were eating at the same restaurant, but I was
That's right.
And I came in and I was like, I was still in my convention tornado mode. Like I could still feel it, where I'm just like, I'm just a hurricane coming through things, you know? And I sat down with you and your wife, and there's other people there.
Yeah, it's my team. Yeah.
Yeah, the team. But I think, I don't know who, I don't want to assume anybody's girlfriend or wives. I don't want to assume anything, but there were other people there.
Yes, there were other people there.
But I sat down and I must have just been like, I was still in my like frantic convention brain mode, and I was just like sitting down. I was like, yeah, ha, ha, blah, 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 blah. Okay, bye. yeah. Dude, well, speaking of all this, so you know what's funny? I figured something out. So like, I don't know why this came up. You know, I've had a comic book out essentially every week for a very long time. Right.
Yeah.
But like this week. So it's weird. It's like even weeks where I'm like, okay, there's no comic book out this week. And then I was like, but the Green Arrow trade is. Does that count?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But what I figured out was, I figured out that I have had a comic book on the stands, at least one comic book on the stands, every month since the last time I had a month where there was no comic book on the stands. I did not release a single thing, was February of 2013.
Wow.
and which is ironically the month that I met my wife. So it's like somehow I had time.
Yeah, right. Like, oh man, no book. Hey, hi. How what are you?
Yeah, doing? I was like, oh yeah. Since then, so in the process of figuring, I was trying to figure out, like, when was the last time I had a month with no comic book out?
Yeah.
And so I figured this out, and I was like, okay, it was February of 2013. That was the last time. And I think this is true. I'm not 100%, but I think this is true. Mm-hmm. Since then, since March of 2013, I have released over 500 comic books.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, we talked about that. You dropped me a message.
Oh, that's right.
Like, yeah, like, I've released 500 books. And I'm like, that's impossible. That's got to be some kind of record.
No way. Because you look at, there's like, no. There are other people. You look at Bendis.
Bendis worked for Bendis 2 years in a row. So yeah, I can imagine that happening. Yeah.
You're talking about, like, there is probably some, I think Bendis has to have that record, though. Like, Bendis has to. Like, you look from, like, I would say 2000 on Bendis. You look from 2000, 2010, how many comics that dude released.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
It's probably
just during the Avengers era where it was like Mighty Avengers, New Avengers, regular Avengers, events, forget about it.
But then also, you know, you had Powers and you had Jones and Ultimate Spider-Man.
Of course. Yeah. Ultimate Spider-Man. You know, that's right.
I think Avengers is probably, well, also X-Men came later, but it's like,
yeah,
I think that Avengers is probably Bendis's like biggest contribution and statement, right? Like that has to be his, in terms of not counting Ultimate Spider-Man, not counting Miles. Like,
Miles is, I think it's Miles very similar to, it's very similar to like the Marvel movies where it's like, it's Marvel and Spider-Man. Like with Bendis, it's like, it's the Avengers and also Miles.
And also Miles and Ultimate Spider-Man, because you cannot deny that how important Ultimate Spider-Man was. But same thing with New Avengers. I know we've had this conversation before.
Like, we touched upon it recently where we're talking about like New Avengers and how important it was and how like how dope it is and how like I wish it would come back. And, you know, it's like,
well, there's that story. It's a great example of like when things work and somebody something that is kind of what might have been seen as controversial. I think this is a public story I'm about to tell. I'm not gonna tell the whole story, but I think you know that how Brevoort did not want Spider-Man and Wolverine on New Avengers.
Oh yeah, no, I think that we've heard like that story. Public, right? Sans like, names. I always thought it was I thought it was Dan Slott, where it was like at the meeting, you know, Bendis is like, why isn't Spider-Man on the Avengers? And I think Bendis actually did throw Slott under the bus, where he's like, Slott was like, oh, he is never going to be on the Avengers. He is a loner. And he's like, yeah, except he's also the star of like Marvel Team Up for what, 100 issues? Like, what are you talking about? And it's like,
no, I mean,
okay, I guess that's a good point. Like,
like when you look at that lineup, it is so cool. Like that
makes so much sense. It's basically the Grant Morrison approach of like, I'm sorry, why isn't everyone who's cool and awesome on the Justice League? Like,
man, that's so funny you said that. I was talking about this with Dennis Culver earlier this week, and he said the exact same thing you just said, like almost word for word. I was like, have you and Dennis been talking behind my back?
Yeah, man. Actually, we have. He did shoot me a text the other day where we're working on something out. But
nice, right on. Well, speaking of this, we should talk about House of Brainiac. That's up here pretty quickly. I sent you some stuff just now. I'm not sure if you saw it. I sent you the we're having an ad, and then I had texted you some art that I don't know if we're gonna show yet. Like I have,
no.
It's been really fun working on this stuff because it's like, you know, we've been building on House of Brainiac and this, you know, we're doing a Superman action crossover, and we've been building on it since Superman #1, and like Rafa is just killing it. Like every single page that Rafa does, I'm like, man, this is so cool.
Yes.
So cool. There's, you know, because it has Superman and Lobo. It's interesting to write a book like this because it's like, you know, I want to respect on an action, and then I have to obviously want to respect what I'm doing as Superman. So it's like trying to combine these two narratives, but not make it so that any of the other characters have been in action, like Connor and Kara and the twins. You know, I don't want them to suddenly take a back seat to their own book. You know, because I feel like it's the book in a lot of ways. So I'm like trying to find a way to balance these two narratives out. But one of the best parts of this book is really just writing Superman and Lobo together.
Oh, and
go on little adventures together and them have like, it's pretty fun. They actually, this is a bit of a spoiler. I'm wondering if you know what this is. In one of the issues, that Superman and Lobo go to Hardcore Station.
Okay.
Do you know what Hardcore Station is?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a book. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's a holdover.
I'm always trying to sneak this stuff in now. I feel like I'm on this mission to sneak as much stuff in.
You resurrected the cyber rats.
Oh, the cyber rats? Is that what you said? I lost you.
Yeah, you resurrected the cyber rats. You brought them back.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to find hacker tech people, and I was like, I know who's a hacker.
So, there's an entire team of them. They had a book. It's called The Cyber Rats and Razor Sharp.
Yeah.
So thank you for resurrecting them, because I think Razor was killed unceremoniously by Superboy Prime back in Infinite Crisis. But
all the Bloodline characters have been, almost all of them have been killed off. Gunfire got killed off in Heroes in Crisis, and then they brought him back in Flash. Like Jeremy.
Oh, really? He's back in Flash? I missed that.
Yeah, Jeremy. Here, hold on a second. I'm gonna see if I'm having. Okay, my internet's being choppy for some reason. Jeremy brought him back in the Flash. It was funny. I was talking to Jeremy, and he was like, "Oh, this issue of Flash is gonna be a big deal," you know. And then he showed it to me, and I read it, and I was like, "This is cool." And then at the ending, I think they go to like Flash Planet or Flash World or something. At the end of this issue, this is like a year and a half ago. I'm not spoiling anything. And I was reading it, and I got to the ending, and I'm like, we did Flash World already. I did Flash World. I completely blanked the fact that on Flash World was like everybody who died in Heroes of Crisis, and he was just breaking them all back. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I brought Roy back. And so, you know, Jeremy came in and was like, I'm going to help clean all this, sir. I'm going to bring all these characters back. And so he brought back my beloved Gunfire.
Yay. See, we all have a favorite. And I obviously, well, Tommy,
no, my
is favorite's
favorite. Not Gunfire. Gunfire is not my favorite. I just thought that was, no. I mean, he basically is Gambit. Like, I mean,
right?
Sort of, because it's like he takes the item and then he can, it's such a funny thing.
Turns
like,
into a gun. Yeah, he can.
Well, he fires from it, but then it like disintegrates. It's like he can basically turn anything into a gun, but then it's like, wouldn't you blast at that point? It's like I have a favorite. Do you have a favorite?
From Bloodlines? Yeah, it's Razor Sharp.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, cool. I mean, but she did have her own book, so I mean, that also goes with it. You know,
did she get a book?
I remember the Cyber Rats did, but you know.
The Cyber Rats did, yeah, but Razor didn't. No, but yours is Tommy.
Oh, I guess you're right. It is Tommy. I guess Tommy, I don't even associate Tommy.
You don't consider him a new blood? Because he definitely.
I'm like, no, man, we took him out. He's over here. No, but the two that I really liked, I think the one that, outside of Tommy, Tommy's a whole other ballgame, dude. Like, that's a whole other thing. You know, it's funny how, because you don't have to even read Bloodlines to read Hitman.
Hitman? No,
not at all. But I liked Argus a lot.
Like Argus, yeah.
Yeah, Miss Wade and Hester, you know?
Yeah. I liked,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I liked the idea behind Anima. But
Anima was cool, Geist was cool. There was a bunch of them in there that I really liked, you know. But Argus was the one, I think, because maybe with how old I was at the time, where I'm like, oh, he's invisible in the dark, is dope.
That's all it takes,
you know. And he had and all this stuff. No, he had a cool costume too. And it's funny how he was like a supporting character in Flash for like a hot second. He's one of the few that I feel like it is funny to see how much some of those books it was like. The annual was it. Those characters never appeared after that. And then some of them, it's like, you know, I was reading for research purposes, you know, I was looking into stuff because of the Superman crossover and with Lobo. I was looking into stuff with Lobo, and I ended up rereading the Lobo Bloodlines annual. And in that, the Bloodlines character in that, I was like, well, this character never showed up again. I was super wrong. They were in Legion. Like, they were in Lobo, they were in Legion, and I was like, oh, okay, like, I just blanked on that. But no, Argus is probably my favorite. House of Brainiac's been fun, dude, mostly just because it's getting the opportunity to work with Rafa. Like, Rafa is just killing it every time and just going forward.
Oh, yeah.
The book is, it's not going to be what people expect, because it's like, it is very much, it's a big Superman story, you know, and it's about the Superman family, and it's about Brainiac, and a little bit about, like, Brainiac's history and sort of what he's doing, because I mean, obviously this is a spoiler, but it's like already out there, where it's like in this story he creates the Brainiac Queen, so it's like why he creates the Brainiac Queen, what's going on with him to where he feels he needs to create this, you know, that's all pieces of the story. And but I'm also that it's fun, like it's a little bit, I don't know, I'm curious what they're gonna think about it, because it can be intense in some parts. I'm trying to make it a little unpredictable. I think. Like, when you read it, you're going to be like, what the hell is he doing?
That's the best kind. That's genuinely, yeah. when I am like, what? Which honestly has been the case with reading Green Arrow. It's why I've been pimping it so hard, because I'm like, I don't think people understand, like, how important this book is to...
You mean that we said it in the very beginning when I said what issue 1 was coming out?
Well, I know, but, like, everybody says that.
It is in the solicit for Green Arrow issue 1. This book will be important. And then people are like, cool, dude. Sure.
Yeah, huh? Right? And it is. It's cool. And it sets up things. And, I mean, like... And it's paying things off and referencing stuff like it, but it's all part of a great rich DC universe. So I mean, like, if I imagine House of Brainiac could be a very similar situation. I mean, yeah. You showed me a double page splash in this. That's just like,
yeah, I showed you the black and white one months ago, and then I showed you the color one a few weeks.
Color one, and it's like, oh my god.
Yeah, and you're like, dude, yeah, it's Alejandro just killing it with Rafa. I mean, they really are. It is funny with Rafa because I'll just be like, this is the. I kind of say to Rafa, this is the easy version of this page, and he's like, No. I have to find a way every time. I'm like, okay, I think there's an easy way to make this page easier for you, right? Like,
right.
And then he's just like, nah, man.
Like, yeah, I'm gonna make it, I'm here.
No, but it's fun. Like, there's some really cool stuff coming up. I mean, I'm working on that a little bit this week, and this week's been a busy one. I'm like juggling stuff. I'm working on, I worked on Green Arrow on Monday, but I'm working on Superman and Batman and Robin at the same time right now. I'm just trying to, as you know, I do a lot.
Yes, you're busy. You're 500 books.
I do way too much, and so, you know, but that's what it is right now. It's the balancing act of everything. The funny with Green Arrow, man, like Green Arrow, I was working on an issue of Green Arrow, and I had to do so much research, like, and then what becomes sometimes a challenge when you're doing research on DC history is like, which history do you go with? And you know, and have, this is actually true of, I think Marvel has this too, you know, in some instances, but having to sit down and be like, okay, what is this? There are times where you have to say, what is this character's origin? And you might be like, oh, there might be three versions of it.
Yes.
Have to go. I'm not even talking about Green Arrow. I'm talking about a different character. Mm-hmm. But in Green Arrow, I was like, I want to make sure I get this right. So I always do that. Like, I always make sure, even when I'm doing like wacky stuff in the books, I'm like, I try to be true to the character, you know, and then the character reacting to this situation. And I always think that's the way to do a lot of these books. Like, that's how I kind of view Superman, is that, like, you can't really change Superman.
Right.
I think you can say something about Superman and you can add to his character. You can't really change him. You know, it's like, because you can go too far with changing Superman. People are going to reject it. Like, I would reject it. Like, you want Superman to be Superman. But what you do is you take a person like Superman and you drop them in situations they haven't experienced before, and you let them react to it, right? Yeah. And you keep them true to their character. And that was a big part of what I was doing this show with the book, where it's like, okay, Superman is still Superman, but now he's having to deal with Lex. Now he's having to deal with Supercore. Now he's having to deal with these new villains. Like, do you see him react to these things? That's part of the fun. But when I'm, same with Green Arrow. Like, Green Arrow, I have Green Arrow's voice in my head, and I kind of have an attitude about how he is. But there was a character in Green Arrow I had to, like, just, I want to make sure it's correct. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, if I'm going to have a character reference something, or I have to figure out a way to, like, you know, I've done this before on a few things, marry the ideas.
Yes.
Like, how do you take them and say, all of this happened, and here's how. And that's sort of what I was doing this week. And I was thinking about this while I was working on it, because I had this, right? Came out this week. I had this on my desk just to double check stuff, just make sure I wasn't contradicting myself.
Sure.
And then I was going back and reading comics from, you know, 40 years ago, just to be like, am I getting this correct? Am I building this together? And I was thinking about this, and I'm like, I wonder how many other writers do this. How many other writers?
Probably a lot less.
I mean, like, there's one panel here, I better get it right. I'm like, digging.
Uh-huh.
I go back and, like, I'll tell the editors, like, I need a reference for these issues to send to this artist. And then it's like, I have to make sure we get it correct. When you're working with an artist that already either knows the character or is a big fan of the character, it can make your life a lot easier. And that's one of the
things
with Green Arrow, when it's like, when I work with Sean or I work with Phil, it's like, they know this stuff, so I don't have to, like, be as crazed about it, you know? Like,
yeah,
especially with both of them. I mean, Phil worked on the book and he knows the character really well. Sean was a huge fan of the character and has read, like, everything. Mm-hmm. So there's a shorthand there, but yeah, it's really fun with Green Arrow, and I think people will be surprised where Green Arrow heads in the future. But yeah, House of Brainiac, you know, I mean, it's like, it is an important story that we're building to, and I think the stuff that we're doing with it, it's going to be, you're going to, I mean, some of the connective tissue is already there, you can tell because of the Brainiac Queen pieces, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of the setup for what the Brainiac Queen is and how she, like, what is happening with her will carry over to Absolute Power. But, you know, for the most part, one thing that was important to me about doing this was making sure that even though we knew that was a piece of it, that it still stood alone. Because I think that's the best type of DC stories, where you're part of the major tapestry, the major universe, but you can still read it by itself. I always feel like whenever I'm at DC, there's always... It's funny, when I was on Flash, I had this
Omnibus on sale now.
Yes, this thing right here. This thing is crazy. Like, so this thing, like, look at this, dude. I'm pretty proud of this. Like, I'm happy that we have this. And there's going to be three of them, but it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to see it like this, you know? I actually got to go through and there were three lines I wanted to change. There were one was an incorrect thing, one was a mistake, and then one was what I just wanted to change. I ended up being able to change two of three, but only because the third one I forgot about while we were going through it, and I'm a little annoyed at myself because it was the one I really wanted. I was like, we have to change this, and we just didn't do it. So, but someday I'll figure out how to change it back. But yeah, like this gigantic beast of a book, like,
yep.
I don't know, it'll be cool to have this on my shelf, you know, because I have a Flash shelf over here, and it has, yes, like, you know, it has, that's the toy shelf. I actually used to have a lot bigger one when I was in the book. It was huge, but I cut it down when I moved to the new office. Mm-hmm. But I have a shelf down here of just Flash trades and hardcovers, and it's pretty cool to have it where it's like, it has, you know, Jeff and Mark, you know, yeah. It's like, to have their hardcover right next to my hardcover, it's very nice. It's cool.
Like, yeah.
You know, but yeah, I really love, I wonder if how many other writers obsess about this stuff the way I do, to like make sure all the continuity stuff is straight. I try.
I hope they do. You know, you want to believe that this is like the norm, but we know one writer who would definitely be like, Josh, what are you doing, man?
There's a few, but there's some just know it too, you know, like, I mean,
yeah, that's true.
I call Mark Waid every once in a while and ask him a question because I know he knows it, or I'll text him, and, yeah, you know, or he'll text me, or then an editor will text me, like, you know, but I mean, Mark knows a good chunk of stuff. Like, I mean, that's, you know, if I ever have a stupid question, I could just call Mark up and just be like, what is the deal with this, you know?
Yeah. Didn't we have that idea? Is that the idea? Was it Mark to use the to do the Stump Mark show?
Oh yeah, Stump Mark show. Yeah. I think if we ever did that, if we ever had Mark on to ask him questions, or you ever had Mark on to ask him questions,
yeah,
the thing I would do to mess with him is I'd make it so that like every like five questions is fake to see
if he can if he thinks it's a trick question.
We'll ask him questions about like 90s books.
Yeah.
And then you have to make sure you ask questions about his own books.
Exactly. Be like, you know, yeah, here's a question. And then he's like, didn't I write that? Are you talking about me, man? Speaking of questions. Oh, good.
Yes. Oh, you have questions? Let's hear it.
I do. I actually ended up going on our Patreon, patreon.com/comicpop. And I was like, you know what? Like, let me just see if anybody had any questions for Josh, because I know that like we to kind of plumb the depths of our comments for that. But I was like, let's see what the patrons say. And they had a couple of really fun zingers. So I wanted to not zingers.
Oh,
really,
man. Oh, zingers. Oh, boy. Let's hear it.
ZBF the King says, when did you know the comic books were going to be your passion?
Probably around fourth grade. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like fourth grade is definitely a moment. I think I told you before, like my elementary school fourth grade yearbook actually said like future job, and it said comic book editor, which is very funny. But that was because at the time, you know, when I was a kid, this is funny. This went on all the way through college. Well, I'll tell you about that in a second. The editor mm-hmm. thing. Because I did explore being editor a few different times in my career, and I've talked about this with publishers and people. I don't think it's a secret, but and I've worked as like a project manager and editor for people in the past. You know, I think I remember reading Wizard magazine, and Wizard magazine was like, oh, I can do this. It was the first time where I started. I was probably around third or fourth grade where I started figuring out that people made these. I know that sounds silly, but it takes a minute for you to start realizing that. And then you start remembering the names of the people. And then you start remembering, oh, wait a minute, that person also writes this book. Oh, they also write this book. Oh, you know what I mean? Like, you start putting it together and then you go like, oh, this artist also draws this or also drew this. Like, you start clicking in your head.
Yep.
And then Wizard really put, at time, really put a face on those creators in a way that for, you know, a kid in the early 90s, late 80s, it just... I didn't have that. I would be love to talk to people who were kids in the early 80s and be like, how did you know? Like, just the shops? Was that it? It was just like you went to the store? Like,
I think so.
There was probably magazines and there was catalogs and stuff like that. Yeah. And there was newsletters and stuff, you know, comic shop news and all that. Like, there was definitely stuff. But Wizard really put a concentrated effort on putting a face on a lot of this stuff. And, you know, so I would read Wizard. And then when I was in fourth grade... we found out there was going to be a comic book convention and we were all going to go, me and my friends, we were going to go to this convention on a Sunday. And what I learned was when we got there was not a comic book convention like we thought it was going to be. It was basically like a large swap meet. And don't get me wrong, it was really fun. It was really fun for a bunch of kids and stuff like that. But I was like heartbroken because we spent all night designing our own superheroes and our own X-Men characters, all this stuff. And we were going to go pitch.
Yeah.
Like, we were going to pitch our stories. We were going to pitch ourselves as artists. Like, we all been sitting there drawing stuff and we drew covers and we spent all night. We had our little notebook full of stuff, you know, and there was no editors there. But I think that was it. I think that was it. You know, I mean, I had already been reading books, you know, I've talked before where it was like my family, my mom and dad both had read comics. And so because they had read comics, I always had comics in the house. So it's like, I've just been around comics this whole time. Like, I my whole life. And, you know, so I think around then, and then, you know, you have moments in and out. Like, I was always that annoying kid at the comic store on Wednesday night or Saturday morning. You know, like, I was just always there, always around. You know, and they got the job working at the comic book store. And I think that's really where it was like. But by the time I got around to go to college, everyone kept telling me like there was no future in comics. Comics are dying, remember? You know, so
of course, yeah, they've been dying for 50 years.
They're dying. There's no money. There's no point. You know, don't do it. And but then I think being, I don't know. It's weird. Like, I look back at other people and how they started off younger or the places they started off at.
Yeah.
But yeah, by the time I got to college, it was like I told you in high school, I was like, I wanted two things. Either I want to be an Imagineer or I want to make comic books.
Yes.
And I just happened to go to a school that had a program with comic book stuff and there were people that worked on comics there. So that was it. But I feel like it's just always been here. Like, I don't know. It's, I don't know if there's ever been a moment where I was not just like reading comic books. Like, it's just been a part of my life. But I would say definitely around 91, 92 is when it became like a lifestyle choice.
That's fair.
Yeah, it was a good time. You got the Batman movie, you got Return, you got Batman Returns come out, you got the X-Men cartoon, you got the Batman cartoon, Image Forms, like, good time for comics. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. Joey Fantone says, is Dark Ride really ending this year?
Yes. Okay. So, issue 12 is it. Yeah, we haven't, I think, you should remind me, I have to respond to an email I forgot to respond to yesterday. you know, yeah, we had always planned on ending at 12, to be like super honest. Like, the idea was I built a story, you know, for 12 issues. And I had a lot of ideas to keep it going. There were a lot of things we could do. And we basically were like, well, we could keep going. Like, we could keep going. And we kept having these different conversations about it. And then early on we were like, well, I think we'll just do the 12, you know, like, we'll just stick to the original plan of doing the 12. We kind of went back and forth on it a couple of times. And it's funny because now, because I've already written 12, so like I'm done with it. But there was two pieces. One, it was like, I have to free up my schedule because my schedule is nuts. And I'm trying to find ways of, you know, cleaning it up this year a little bit. And then two, you know, it felt like the right moment in the story, you know? Yeah. I could potentially bring it back sometime because I had more ideas for that world. Sure. But I'm actually really happy. I'm really happy with how it ended because, you know, at the end of the day, Dark Ride is in a lot of ways about me. And because the main character, Sam, is like a workaholic and I'm clearly a workaholic. So it's like the story, it's interesting to start that book how long ago I did. And the lesson that one of the lessons that the main character is learning about is like taking a step back on work and you know, prioritizing things that aren't work all the time and not being workaholic. So right. It's like that's what the character's going through as I'm going through it in real life. So that's also why part of me was like, 12 is a good place to stop this story. But I'm really happy with the ending. Like I feel like the ending, the last couple of scenes of the ending, I think for me were like emotional to write.
Yeah. You know?
And so I felt like that was the right place to end it. Like I felt like for all the characters and the character choices they were making, right. It felt like that was the end of those arcs. And so all those character arcs were ending. And it was like, at the very least, I'm closing this chapter of this world. I could come back to this world, but I'm closing this chapter now. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. I'm glad that it feels like both cathartic and appropriate. Like that you're like, yeah, I'm ready. Like I'm ready for it to kind of be huge.
Yeah. Somebody from Skybound actually called me last week. We were talking about other stuff, obviously talking about Energon Universe stuff and talking about Cobra Commander. And in that call, they were like, oh, hey, congratulations on finishing Dark Ride. And I was like, huh, what? Oh yeah, man, I'm already moved on. We got more work to do. We talking about, right. You know, I was like, my brain is just like, I've been like this for a while. Like, it's funny when Flash, when I finished Flash, there was a moment where one of the editors, who wasn't at DC anymore, but one of the editors, like months after I left Flash, called me and was like, do you want to come back to Flash? And I was like, my brain is moved on so far that even when I was writing Flash at Infinite Frontier and when I was writing him in Dark Crisis.
Death Metal. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Well, I wrote him in Dark Crisis. Yeah. For
yes.
The scenes with him and Hal.
Right.
I was, oh man. Yeah. This, I could feel myself detached from him, which was so weird because he was such a part of my life for so long. Like I had lost the voice in my head almost. Not lost it, but it had changed. It had clearly, yes. I could hear it had changed. And my Barry, I wasn't in Barry's head the same way I was before, but that's how I am. Like I'm a shark, man. You got to keep moving. Like I,
right.
That's it. That's it. So
that's once right.
I finish the project, I'm like, good. Move on to the next one.
Yeah. Lance Hickerson has one that I'm really interested in because my wife is always asking this question of anybody. She's Lane Hickerson. How would you revamp the supernatural or magic side of DC? I feel like there's a lot of potential in those characters, but it doesn't seem like there's like a house or office that gets a lot of attention for magic.
Magic is tough. I feel like the person who did the best work with magic, people are not gonna like my answer here, but in my time, the one that I felt like was doing some of the best cool stuff with magic was James when he was Justice League Dark.
Yeah.
And that book was just solid and was good. But what was funny about that book is that it actually addressed sort of one of the, I don't want to call it problems with magic in general, but magic is tough because there magic can easily fall into there are no rules.
Totally.
And you can write, there are no rules. And if there are no rules, there are no stakes.
Yeah.
And I think that can be difficult sometimes. Like, I would be curious. I mean, obviously, you shape it around the magic characters that are popular, right? Like, I want to bash certain books because there are sometimes the magic books have lasted and done well. But it's been a while. I think Justice League Dark is kind of it. Like, I think that was the last time. You know, there's some stuff on the horizon that I think will be really interesting. I am touching on some DC magic stuff. That's really weird that person asked that. I am going to be touching on some DC magic stuff soon.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have to do a lot of magic research myself to sort of make sure I get it right. Like, we'll definitely be going to the Oblivion Bar, but that's like the easy thing to do.
Totally. Visiting there, like fun, you know, you can go to the tower or you can go to the Oblivion Bar or you can deal with the Helmet of Fate and stuff like that. But it's like,
yeah,
what does that mean? Like, what are the, you know, and it's funny, like I'm in a similar situation where it's like when they did the Death of Magic, when they were like, oh, magic has a cost. And my wife was like, oh, like she loved Aaron's whole approach to Doctor Strange over at Marvel and everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That book
it's a good book.
Real good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one. Yeah. They're like legit. There are legit life lessons in that book.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The whole thing where if you punch somebody, hurts your hand too. And that's
yes.
How magic works. I was like, Jason, you're a genius. Good job. You.
It's true. That's but great. At the same time, for me, that demystifies and makes magic less fun. Like for me, because I think that a lot of people like really overemphasize the magic has a cost angle after that.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
They saw that and they were like, yeah, that's the idea. The rule. Okay. So we have a rule now. Magic has a cost.
But that is sort of, but That is, it's funny because that is a how do I put this? Magic is interesting. I'm in no way an expert on magic, like in any way, shape, or form, but I do, I think you know this, I'm very superstitious. And I feel like the kind of energy you put out in the world can come back at you. And I always believe, I think we talked about this before, where it's like, I might have put this in one of the books. I never wish bad things on people ever.
Right.
I feel like it's because you're putting that out in the world and come back at you. Like I do think that about my own superstition. So it's like, if magic works the same way of like, if you put dark magic out in the world, it's going to affect you at the same time. What I do though, when it comes to wishing things on people, I never wish anything bad on anybody. I always say the same thing. I might have told you this before. Mm-hmm. I always wish exactly some. I said, I wish they learned something. Because that can go in a million different ways.
Yeah.
You know, fuck around, you find out, right? But that's basically
totally.
Like, that's all I said. I hope, I wish that they learned something. That's it. Because that can go in a lot of different ways. But it is sort of a cheat. It absolves me of any, like, I would never wish anything bad because I can get kind of caught up in karma and that kind of stuff. But magic, I think that idea that, like, magic, if you, it has a cost, is a good rule. It is a good rule. But then it becomes like, well, that's what's funny about, because the moment you establish a rule, you got questions on that rule. It's 100%, like, we were talking about this before the video started. We were talking about a book that I really liked. Was 8 Billion Genies.
Yes.
That Charles Soule did last year. And might have been 2 years ago now. But
I think so.
That book is funny because there's rules to the wishes. And then at some point they have like lawyers basically writing the wishes. It's a spoiler, but they're like lawyers, or of course Charles had a lawyer in the book, but they were lawyers were writing the wishes, so there's no monkey's paw anyway.
I love
magic. You know, I don't know, like, who, I guess you'd have to center around a character. I mean, there's obvious characters you center magic around in the DCU, right? Like, my daughter is a huge Zatanna fan.
Zatanna, I think, is the obvious choice.
Yeah, she reads all the Webtoon Zatanna books. She gets those, and she loves them. And there's other Zatanna books that DC's put out that are like the kid ones, and she loves them. You know, obviously there's John. You know, there's obviously Constantine, like you said, Dr. Fate. And I think there are moments where it's tough. But like, yeah, I guess that's how you revitalize. How would I revitalize it? I don't know if I would.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would. I would like to tell stories in that world. I'm not sure if I want to spend that much time in that corner right now. I actually think that, like, you know, I feel like the areas of the DCU that I'm a little more interested in right now are some of the more grounded areas than the fantastical areas. So I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I am touching on some magic stuff pretty soon. You'll see. You'll see. It's gonna be real obvious here. Like,
it's
be a
coming.
Cover in like 2 months, I think.
What like, oh, remember that episode?
2 or 3 months. Yeah, there'll be a cover, and people will be like, "Oh, okay. Okay, get it now."
This dude, Chris Wolf, who is a friend of mine, who also clearly wrote this for me, which I really appreciate. He said, "If you were gonna write the Superman Spider-Man sequel crossover, who would your dream collaborator be?"
Superman and Spider-Man, huh?
Yeah. And I guess that would also, they did the first one. There was also the other one with Doctor Doom and Wonder Woman and stuff.
Yeah.
But,
No, the first one is one of my favorite. We've talked about this. That's like one of my favorite comics ever.
It's great.
A lot of my thoughts on villains actually come from that book.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of my thoughts on villains come from that book, because I don't think a lot of villains want to actually end the world. They just want money. They just want what everybody else wants. And that book basically talks about that. Like, they spell that out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It humanizes some villains in a way. Cause it's like, why would, if you're a villain and you're just like, I want money, I want riches, I want power. Not all of them want to take over a country.
Hell no.
You know, whenever a villain is like, I'm going to destroy the world, all the other villains should be like, what are you doing? It's like
an idiot,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, four villains should be trying to stop other villains from like messing with their stuff. This is kind of what the plot of, when I did Illuminati, that was sort of what the plot of Illuminati was supposed to be.
Yes.
to reference a book from a very long time ago.
Illuminati is a great book, by the way, folks. Have you ever checked out Joshua Williamson's, I think, 4-issue run on Illuminati?
It was, I think it was seven.
Seven? Number of series.
I got my trade.
You got a trade, yeah.
Yeah, they that was kind of the plot of that, but I really love it. So collaborators, oh man, this is tough. I feel like there's obvious answers. Oh no, I know who I would want. It was Jorge Jimenez.
Oh yeah.
Because I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen Jorge draw Spider-Man before. I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure he's drawn Spider-Man commissions.
There's no way he hasn't drawn him for fun, but to see. Yeah, his Superman.
He was killing that. My first impulse was Dan Mora.
Sure.
And then I started leaning into like John Romita Jr. Like this is the stuff that was in my brain of like, you know, and I really love John, so I'm like, okay, maybe John Romita Jr. And then I was like, oh, but then I was like, but the first thing, then with John Romita Jr., I'm like, well, he's drawn so much Spider-Man, he's drawn Superman. So I'm like, okay, yeah. This makes sense. And I started going down this hole, but then I was like, who would do a really cool Spider-Man that I haven't seen before? And I'm like, oh, Jorge.
Yeah,
Jorge Jimenez.
You put them in a position where the audience is like, if I want to see a Spider-Man drawn by Jorge Jimenez, I have to pick up the new Superman Spider-Man crossover.
I would want us to do a bigger size and everything, like just do.
Oh yeah, the oversized. Yeah, because I think you and I were lamenting the idea that like with the crossover omnibus that's coming out.
Yeah, they're not.
They're not going to be able to make it bigger, so they're going to have to be cropped and well, not cropped, yeah. But like you know, shrunk.
Shrunk. Yeah, it's always a problem when things get shrunk down instead of.
Blown up.
I want bigger.
Yeah, I you know, apropos of that, I saw what was it? Walt Simonson was posting pages from his Titans X Men crossover.
You mean this Walt Simonson right here?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's really funny. This has happened to be here. I was talking to
someone. This is the second time, third time that's happened that we've literally referenced a book, and you're like, oh, you mean this book right here?
On purpose. That one was an accident.
Yeah.
That was just pure coincidence. I had that book there. Yeah, Walt Simonson is dope. Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was posting pages from the Titans X-Men crossover, and I was like, you have all those pages? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, are we getting a big book of that?
He has those pages?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I have a copy of that too in my office. I have a copy of that as well. It's around here.
Oh
somewhere.
Yeah. I have it over there, but it's, you know, but like seriously, I was like, well, we got to get a big one of that. If we're, you know, if we're getting the crossovers again, like get IDW or Dark Horse to make a big oversized edition.
Yeah, get IDW to make a big old thing. Yeah, that'd be dope. That's a great. Yeah, I got this. This was a birthday gift this year. From Ben Abernathy. So he got as a birthday gift. And looking at this thing, I love this thing. Walt Simonson is great. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. I didn't realize he had pages. That's bonkers, dude. That's bonkers.
Right? No, he was posting them, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, that crossover is cool as hell.
Right?
Yeah, but Jorge Jimenez, that's the answer.
That is the answer. That is a completely excellent answer. Brandon Jones, are there any Golden Age teams or characters that have potential, but they've not been updated?
Every time I would say, I feel like almost everything that I'm interested in has been touched on.
Yeah.
A lot of the JSA stuff, a lot of the Sandman stuff, like the Wesley Dodds stuff. I mean, the fact there's a Wesley Dodds book, I think that just ended or is right now, right?
Yeah.
The Venditti one. You know, for a long time, I really wanted to do something with Crimson Avenger, most because no way had done anything with Crimson Avenger. But then Jeff brought back Crimson Avenger back, or brought the new Crimson Avenger during JSA. Yes. You know, it's funny working at DC sometimes because I've made this joke to you before about like Simpsons did it.
Yeah.
Like that happens all the time where you're looking at stuff and you're like, damn it, Grant.
Yeah, Grant did it.
Like it's one of those, like, oh, Grant did it. Yeah, I was on the phone with Grant 2 years ago and I was talking about, I feel like Grant might be the first person I told I was writing Superman. I was talking to Grant about Superman and I have this rule about working on Superman. I think I told you before, like when I was working on Superman, I made a note in my notebook where it was no Grant, no Jeff.
Oh,
because
yeah.
My impulse, because I'm just a fan of those characters and I feel like they create an interesting balance in the DCU because they're different writers, you know, but they have similar sensibilities, but they're very different writers, you know, and they come at things from almost opposite ends at times. you know, I think they've talked about this in interviews that, you know, Grant sees the superheroes as like modern gods, right? Like they're modern gods. And then Jeff sees them as humans, they're people. Mm-hmm. And so they both approach it differently. But because they have done so much in the DCU, I just made a rule. I was like, I don't want to touch with Superman in particular. Because it was like, I've done so much. I mean, working on Damian, you know, you're going to touch on Grant stuff. And obviously working on Flash, you're going to touch on Jeff stuff. And it was very much on Dark Crisis was almost a lot of both of their ideas. It was both of mm-hmm. both things that I touched on for both of them. Because I had originally called Grant, asked Grant's advice on some stuff for Dark Crisis. But, you know, I made this rule, no Jeff, no Grant. But once I did that, it sort of took a bunch of stuff off the table.
Right, like, yeah, of course.
A lot of stuff off the table. So then it became this game of like, oh, there's characters I kind of want to use. Or I'm like, nope, not going to use them. We're not going to use them. But so with all that, that's where it becomes challenging about like, taking a golden age concept or character and trying to revitalize it now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm not even sure I would be interested in that. That's the thing that's funny about some of this stuff. I'm not even sure how interested I am in revitalizing some of this stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like Green Arrow, like, don't get me wrong, there's characters. There are characters I definitely am like, I want to tell a story with that character.
Yes.
But
yes.
My approach is, I don't know about more about like definitive takes on that character than trying to, I don't know. I'm not sure there's any characters I feel like I want to revitalize. I don't feel like I revitalized Green Arrow. Like I just took all the pieces that were here and I knew what needed to be, I don't want to call it course corrected, but there were things that bugged me that I wanted to change.
Yeah.
You know? And so I approached things from that, but yeah, I don't know if there's any golden age concepts. I mean, JSA, I love those characters, and I think that's one of those, like, especially in the 2000s, that was like one of the best, consistently just best books. Right. You know, I have JSA Omnibus, the three Omnibuses somewhere over here. My DC shelf is not alphabetized right now, so it's a whole mess. I know where some stuff is, but anyway, yeah. I'm not sure. But what was your next? What was your question?
Oh, let's see here. Do you have a favorite run? What's your favorite full run?
Oh, like in general from anybody ever? Or
DC me? Or Marvel? And I was like, yeah. I'm like,
what's a run that I am like?
That's got to be Mark Waid's Flash, right? I mean, that's got to be a
Flash. Yeah, yeah. I feel like, well, it's funny because even Jeff's run picks up pieces from Mark's. I mean, you could, if you sat down and you read The Flash from Return of Barry Allen all the way to Rogue War, that's a dope Wally story. Like that is just, and it isn't just, to be fair, it's not just, you know, Mark and Jeff. You have Grant and Millar in there. You have Brian Augustine. Like there's a lot of other stuff going on in there. But I think if you sat down and read that like, I remember being in the comic book store. I was working at a comic book store at the time, and Flash 225 came out. And I remember cutting the box open, pulling it out, sitting in the back and reading it. And, you know, I'm obviously a huge Flash fan, and reading 225 and then just being like, this is the end of a nearly like 15 year long storyline, you know, maybe not, or like 13 or 14 years, you know?
Right.
But really being like, oh, this is the end of an epic that I've been reading since I was a kid. Like I remember sitting there and then putting it down, just being like, man, you know, and then hand selling it to customers and talking about Flash to customers that day. Cause it was a Wednesday, you know?
Yeah. Of course.
And just really like hard selling, like, man, this is cool. This was great. This is awesome. You know, just really going for it. Yeah, I was probably that, you know, there's other stuff that I really liked, you know, like obviously we were talking about, you know, Bendis on Hulk Spider-Man or Bendis on Avengers or Bendis
on Daredevil.
Yeah, I guess that's
true.
You know what the other one is? Garth Ennis on Punisher. Garth Ennis on Punisher. Yeah. That's one I've reread that a few times and I have all of those hardcovers. I really love that one. That's tough. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. And then it's like, I don't want to name some because I think they falter in the end or they falter in the middle. But I think one of the best modern runs on a character is Jason Aaron on Thor. Because he did all of it. Like, that's an example of somebody who was like, you know, doing the birth, the death, the like the transformation, the challenges, yeah. like all of it, all of it. And that's what I think is probably one of the modern great examples for, I think, creators to look at and be like, if you're coming out of a character, you have to sort of tell a big story, you know, and you got, you're going to make some changes. And, you know, it's one of the things that's kind of weird. Like all the big, oh, man, what I'm about to say isn't right. But what I'm about to say isn't right. All right.
All right.
A lot of these big runs have a moment where the hero is no longer the character. They're no longer wearing the costume, right? Yeah. Somebody else puts it on. And you even look at like Chip, what Chip just did on Daredevil, and the fact that you got through that, you got, you know, Elektra. You got Elektra, right? Like, and obviously with Thor, you had Jane Foster.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Batman, and there's been moments where Batman, you know, like look at Grant, you know, it was Dick Grayson for a bit minute, you know?
Right.
I think there are moments on these characters where you have a moment where somebody else is that character. I would be curious because you're, I mean, look at Superman, like one of the best Superman stories of all time is about four people being Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
let me ask you this, because you're a really big Spider-Man person, and I think you know way more about Spider-Man than I do. Other than like the Slingers.
Yeah, it's like, Ben.
Oh, Ben, yeah. Pff, duh. Yeah, Ben.
Right?
Yeah.
It was, and even then, this is speaking from somebody who hated that, by the way. Like, I quit the Doc Ock. Yeah. Dude, Doc Ock's the most recent example.
Yeah, Superior Spider-Man was dope. That book is real good. That's a book I was going out every Wednesday when it was out. I'd go out there, I would buy it. Even when I was broke at the time, it's one of the few times I tried to buy pages because Ryan Stegman had pages from that book online, and I tried to buy them. Which, by the way, back then they were like $200-$300. Man, like now they're probably like a lot more.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah. Like one of the first conversations I ever had with Ryan in person was about this, about how I tried to buy his art and I couldn't because I missed it. It was all gone. I think that's it though, right? Like, I mean, but I think I think every big run on a character has a moment where that character is no longer, like they get replaced somehow.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
They get replaced by somebody else. Even looking at what we were talking about, Mark Waid, like, there's a moment in Mark Waid's run going Terminal Velocity where basically Wally is like, I have to take a step back. And then Jesse becomes the Flash, right? And pisses off Impulse. But like, that's, you know, I think all of the major runs have that moment.
That's a cool idea. Like, that's a good point.
I think that's the three pieces you have to have on a major run is you have to have a birth and a death, either whichever order you want to put them in, maybe a death and a birth, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have a moment where they die and then resurrected, but then you also have moments where somebody else takes on the role. And I think if you look at all the major runs on books, I'm sure there are runs where this is not the case. I think Superman is one of the hardest ones to do this with.
Yeah.
But people have definitely taken on the role of Superman at different moments in time. But look at Captain America, you know, look at Brubaker's Captain America, like Steve died, you know, Bucky became Captain America and then he came back. Like
And it's arguably one of the best Captain America runs of all time. Run?
Yeah, he wrote that book for like 10 years, man.
Exactly. Great. No, it's incredible. Yeah,
yeah. It's one of my. It's funny, like when I think about Brubaker, and obviously I think mostly about the Crater on stuff. I think about Criminal and Reckless, and you know those. Oh, but then, like that Captain America book was so good. I have all those hardcovers, and I've thought about doing like a reread. We have time for one more question, and then I have to go to another meeting. As today is a day of meetings, I'm just like going to meetings all day. This is the fun one, though. Everything else is going to be all serious comic book talk, conversations about crossover,
serious business.
Serious comic book conversations.
Yeah. Man, there's a couple that I'm like, it's dancing a line. I'm like, we can't. I don't want to stoke any fires of speculation. So we'll just leave
that. Don't get me in trouble. Yeah.
Exactly. But there's one that I like that's more like topical, and it's more it could get in the weeds, but like,
oh man, well I love getting in the weeds, but yeah
you know what, now yeah, we're gonna save it, I'll save it
for save it. All right, we'll save it next time. I was actually thinking about this, that we should do this more frequently possibly, but
yeah,
we do have our plan. We're gonna do special. Yes. we might do that maybe next month. We always say next month. I feel like, well, because I think for us to do what we want to do, we have to like really set. I was thinking about this morning, and I was like, okay, I have to figure out some stuff to make sure we can really do that. But yeah. Well, what was I going to tell you? I don't know. All right, let's. I got to go.
Yeah. Well, folks, for volume one of Green Arrow is on sale now. Volume one of the Omnibus for Flash is on sale, or at least you can pre-order it, I believe. I don't know if it's actually on. Yeah,
it's April, also April. Yeah, but then also, House of Brainiac. You know, check it out. Let your comic shop know. You know, you want to pre-order or just buy it when it comes out. You know, get into that comic book store and pick it up. I hope you. Yeah. The first issue is nuts. The first issue is nuts. Like Rafa does crazy.
Seriously,
stuff.
Folks, Rafa Sandoval, you can't go wrong with this book. It is sick looking. I myself am excited for it and hope you are too. But Josh, thanks for being here, and we'll see you guys next time with an all new episode.